Hey guys, it's Ben from Startup Chats. Hope you're doing really well. Today I've got Jonas with me, he is the founder of Orphi Active, which is a, you tell us everyone what Orphi Active is all about, and we can sort of dive into it and share with the audience, your story, you know, where you came from, your background, and how it all began.
Right, so quite a lot there, right? Orphi Active, in essence, is like a marketplace between organizers of sport and participants. So we're allowing people to easily create, manage, discover, and join a variety of sporting activities out there. And how it started was pretty much from a personal experience. I'm an immigrant in this country, in the UK. I'm from Lithuania originally. So, you know, my sport is basketball, and nobody plays basketball in the UK, really. So I really struggled to find places or people to play with. When I did find something, it was through Gumtree, which is fairly dodgy in my mind. So I thought there definitely has to be a better way, but there wasn't. So I used my skill set as a graphic designer and kind of really focusing on UI, UX, branding, and just tech overall. To start just initial designs at my last year at uni was quite a long time ago, about 6-7 years ago. It's called Ravensbourne in London. I don't think many people know, but it's called a university sector college. It was part of London City University. So it was like a small university just by the O2 arena. There was an instance where, you know, when you stay out late, you look at the window and there's like a red carpet and like Snoop Dogg walks by to the O2 arena or something, right? So it had these perks, right? When I graduated at the end of the year, you've got this what's called a degree show where you showcase all your stuff. And essentially what happened from everything I've done throughout those basically 3 years at graphic design, that one basically the designs of the app were gotten the most attention, both from businesses, from individuals, from families and whatnot. And that was the point where it's like, okay, so this is just not just in my head, right? It's probably something a bit bigger than I initially thought. And it actually did solve a legitimate problem, not just for basketball, but like overall for a variety of sports that might not be as popular, like football or rugby or something like that.
So this all stems really from just, you know, you've saw in the marketplace within your own personal situation, actually, you know, how do I go about organizing events? How do I get people to want to come and join me? And there was that trouble and that disconnect that you found.
Yeah. And I think, you know, all the best companies come from personal challenges, personal problems, or something that you really struggle with. Because the thing is that when I then developed the app, I use myself as a customer, right? I'm solving my own thing. And, you know, now that we've got the app, like I'm using it on a weekly basis, you know, and it's, you know, I experience what it is, and the bugs and everything that we fix is based not only on the user's feedback, but myself as well. That's really helpful, you know.
Fantastic. And so, it's interesting actually, because I think a lot of people don't appreciate how long things take to get to where you are. So if we roll it back to that starting point and that initial aha moment, how long ago is that from now?
So I failed at it twice. That's how long. And this is my third try, right?
That's the way you learn, isn't it? That's ultimately the way you learn.
And both failures had completely different problems, different issues, and taught me different lessons, right? So the first one was I knew nothing about business. I wasn't interested in business. I wasn't interested in making money. I just wanted to make cool shit. That's it. Like, that's what I was. You know, I was an early 20s designer, you know, played basketball, just like, oh, this looks awesome, right? Yeah. I'll just make it. So I found a co-founder that's very much business minded and sales minded, to take care of that side. And I didn't even touch it. Like, he incorporated the company. He dealt with all the equity stuff, all that. Right. So I was just doing the cool stuff. So the only thing we didn't have for a tech product was developers. So we bootstrapped the whole thing.
Yeah,
that's the probably challenge. My first mistake. You know, co-founder should maybe be tech and learn the business side. but yeah, essentially, what happened? We bootstrapped the whole thing. So you know, I found a job at a financial institution in central London. Very boring job, doing you know, random designs that nobody cares about. But got a really good salary for like a first job. So basically, 85% of my salary would go to the developers. And the rest of it would be rent and noodles, basically. And, you know, that went on for about a couple of years, to be honest. And with developers, I guess it does come down to kind of you get what you pay for. You know, we hired this Egyptian development company, which just did a shit job. I'm sorry. Like, you know, I'm sure that there's really good agencies there, but the one we had is just was just really bad.
I think that's really challenging, actually. And
that money.
Just to pick up on that point, Jonas, I think that's a really important point to sort of expand upon, because whenever, you know, it's unlikely a founder or co-founder will have all the skill sets that are required. And particularly when it comes to the tech side, it's very easy to lose or not understand whether somebody's good or whether somebody's bad, because what you don't know, you don't know. And I think the tech side is really, really difficult to overcome if you don't have that co-founder who's also technically minded.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the only development I knew was web development, and web development is very different from app development, right? And I didn't really have a reference point. So whatever they did, that was my reference point. I was like, oh, so this is how it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. If I were to look back, the amount of money we spent within 2 years, I'd rather have spent that in 2 months, but actually had a product developed by some really good developers, or in an ideal scenario, have a co-founder that's you know, a tech person, right? So that's definitely a challenge. And it's actually a challenge until this day, just understanding how much time and effort and what variables are there for a smallest feature that you wouldn't think about, because I came there from a designer's point of view. You know, I go, well, here's the screen. It has to do this. For me, it's straightforward. For example, if I say a user needs to log in, right? For me, it's enter details, press button, open app, right? But there's so much that goes behind that initially I was like, how can this take 2 weeks? This doesn't make sense to me. This is nothing. Like there's all these other features that I understand will take longer. And only after all these years, I'm kind of starting to almost fully understand what goes into the set and things, at least within my industry and my ecosystem. But it's a constant learning curve, because the languages change, the developers change, and everything changes. So you have to be really adaptable and very quickly.
Definitely. And get back to that early stage. I think it's quite honorable, not honorable is probably the wrong word, but quite impressive how a young guy come out of university, first job, getting paid quite well, but actually wants to not put all that money in their own pocket and just have a great time in London, but actually, you know, live on baked beans and jacket potatoes or whatever you're living on, and plowing most of your money back into that, you know, vision and that that end goal.
I think it really. I'm just probably. Yeah.
What was the motivation for that? What was there a driving force for that?
It's literally how I grew up, right? Coming up in Eastern Europe, like we're not fancy in there. Like, you know, yes, you know, I had a roof over my head, I had food, but that's pretty much it. There was no luxury. There was no, you know, what's considered in the UK. Fairly normal is fancy in Lithuania, right? And so I was under that mindset that, you know, I need the absolute bare minimum. I knew what I need to survive to live, and I wasn't fancy. And so it didn't make sense to me, like at that point, to, I don't know, spend £3 on a coffee. Like for £3, I can live for a week, right? I can, you know, buy so much noodles, right? Because that was the mindset. And then I didn't really think about the fact that, oh, I'm spending money on this. It wasn't even that. It was like, this is what I've got. This is what I want. this is what just has to happen. I remember like it did reach a point where I felt, okay, this might be too far, because there was a period of just over a week where I had to actually, essentially be homeless. Just I was sleeping by a train station on a bench.
You're kidding me.
It was the weirdest thing, because
basically, so not even on a friend's sofa.
I didn't have any friends, mate. Like, that's one of the things of being an immigrant, and it's a bit of an ego thing as well to ask somebody to do that. It's just like a pride thing. For me, it's just like I'd rather sleep on the pavement than ask for somebody to.
Wow.
It's I don't know where it comes from, but that's the thing that does.
Well, you haven't got that network of family and friends, ultimately.
Nothing, and like I can't tell my mom that happened, because she'll freak out, right? So yeah, it's all on you. And basically, what happened?
Wow, you grew up quickly.
I was in a suit with a laptop. You know, I would sleep on the bench, go up, go to Central Bank, work in a financial institution full time, 9 to 5 with that computer and everything, and then come back to the same bench. It was so ludicrous.
I'm working on your startup. This is like a tech entrepreneur, startup entrepreneur.
And that was the only reason I did that.
What
was
a story!
They the developers, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, after that time, I realized that that's bullshit. And I did find some like a shared accommodation over a pub.
Yeah.
Some hippies that, you know, it was like double beds and all that. So I spent like a month there. It was like 10 quid a night.
Wow.
And then from that point, I think like, yeah, just bed by bed, you know, I kind of came back to somewhat a normal lifestyle. So that was basically, I'm not saying that's what you have to go through for a startup, but yeah. I'm just saying that, you know, there's, at the end of the day, all your excuses are irrelevant. If you want it, you'll find a way. That's I guess, is the message.
I think that's a great story to share. You know, ultimately, it's about making a sacrifice and not having all those fancy things, and put that to one side if you've got a vision that you actually want to follow through with.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. So that was progressing. That business was progressing. We were speaking off air a moment ago, and you said that then you started having differences with the co-founder, and that sort of you parted ways there. Had you got to the point when it was launched at that stage, or was it still in the pre-launch phase?
It was still in pre-launch. As I said, we had so many problems with the developers that was actually one of the big points of kind of our differences with the co-founders, that he wanted to stay with those developers. He thought it was going well, and I fairly quickly realized that that's not normal, right? And I was a lot more techie than he was. So that was one of the reasons. The other reason, without going into much details, was as I mentioned before, I put like full trust in him dealing with the business side of things. And sometimes, you know, I didn't know him that well. Like, we met on a basketball court, like we just had good chemistry and you know, we're somewhat friends. And he has hidden some stuff from me, and you know, when it comes to like equity and stuff like that I wasn't even aware of. So that just basically, there was some sneaky stuff that just burned the bridges. And yeah, I just felt that I can't be in business with somebody that is not fully transparent.
Yeah.
Right. So I just walked away from it. I think he still does it to this day, but I walked away. And to be honest, at that point, I was like, it became a bit competitive for me, because it was my idea. That was my experience, you know, my designs and everything. I was like, I have to do this.
Yeah.
And that's where, during that time, I met my girlfriend and now wife as well.
Yeah.
And so basically, at the point where we split ways, she had to come back to Manchester to finish her master's. And I was like, all right, this is a pretty good, you know, distraction for me. So I just moved from London to Manchester, joined a startup, which is actually a good decision, because again, I got an offer from a startup for way less money and an offer to work in another banking institution for a lot more money. I was like, I'm not falling for this trap again. So I joined the startup, and I worked for the startup for maybe a week, because I realized that I can't bootstrap the app again. It's just, you know, I can't go through the shitty stuff again, especially now that I was living with my girlfriend and stuff. Mm. Like, there's more responsibility. So I sat down with the investor of the other startup and I said, look, this is what I've got. You know, I know it's working. This is a prototype. The meeting took maybe 4 minutes and the rest was history. The next day I was looking for to hire a developer.
Oh, wow.
So I was quite lucky, I would say. But at the same time, I feel like...
Well, you put yourself in that position, didn't you?
I could have not asked him. You know, I could have not sat him down.
You could have actually even gone to the job, gone for the financial services job, got paid more money rather than the startup where you're going for more experience for less money.
Yeah.
You just put yourself in the right place.
And, you know, throughout the years, it becomes a pattern. The more difficult the decision, the more risky the decision, the bigger the payoff, right? And yes, there were a lot of times where I was like, oh, maybe not the best decision I've made, but now I know, right? This is the kind of that itch is scratched, right? So I'm almost never now taking the safe route just because I'm curious. I'm curious what's going to happen, right? Because there's when you go through so much, you know, adversity, you know, since I was like a small kid, nothing really scares me anymore. So like failure, even now, like what's the worst that can happen? I'll work at a Starbucks for a bit. Like it's, that's not bad, right? You know, my parents were occupied. They couldn't leave the country. They were, you know, my grandparents were in Siberia. Like I got it good, right?
Yeah, so, no, absolutely. I think that's the key, isn't it? It's interesting because, you know, as your life does progress, then I guess risk factors and your appetite to risk can evolve. But ultimately, if you always keep at the back of your mind, you know, where you came from and, you know, actually, in the grand scheme of things, does it matter? Then I think, it's a calculated risk. And I think sometimes also risk is one of those things that for some people it looks risky if they're not in it. Whereas if you're in it, it's not necessarily risky because you're more aware of the parameters that you're working within. So I guess it's the perception of risk, isn't it?
And it depends, obviously, who you surround yourself with. You know, my now wife, you know, she's fully aware of the fact that any day I can come back and say, yeah, we're doing this now. and she's fully committed to that, right? I made that very clear from the very beginning. This is what you're getting into right now. And I think that's a big thing anywhere. That's in business and relationships anywhere, like this over-communication and transparency. So there's no surprises later on. 100%. So
did you say there was 3 iterations of this, or so we're now at the second?
Yeah, so the first failure was basically mostly business related, right? And inexperience from that side of things.
And the technology sort of struggles, I guess, as well.
Yeah, well, I guess recruitment and understanding what actually it takes. The second failure, so we actually launched the second product, right? So the second time it was called Hoops Connect at that time. And so we did launch the product. We had full-time, you know, developers and stuff like that. And what happened there was that was the first time I actually employed somebody. It was the first time I legitimately ran a business. Cause as I said before, it was just 2 of us. I was doing my thing. He was doing his thing. There was no running a business. And there's like, oh, I need to pay salaries. Oh, I need to do this and this and office space and da-da-da-da. And so, again, I made a lot of mistakes in my decision-making and priorities, especially in the product as well. We were creating something that we thought people wanted rather than asking what they actually wanted, right? So when we launched, first of all, we launched way too late. Second of all, we launched with a lot of features that apparently people just didn't want, but the feature that they did want didn't work properly because we just wanted to cram it with as many things as possible, right? So at the end of the day, it was just that the product was just not performing well. And it was always like 1 step forward, 5 steps back. And we realized that we're just burning money. We're not getting traction. The traction that we are getting, we're losing people because their experience on the app is horrible. And so, yeah, we just pulled the plug on that as our own decision, just kind of accepting failure from that point of view. And we basically took a year off, but we wanted to keep the people in. Like we didn't want to just separate because we had a really good core team.
Yeah.
So we founded Orphe Media. So it was a digital marketing and branding agency because that was basically the skill set that we had. Yes. So we're creating branding, websites, apps, and stuff like that, right? And actually, that's for me, again, never been in an agency, never had an agency, completely new challenge. And I don't want to say it was easy, but it was easier, right? It was very binary. Find a client, produce something, you know, get paid, carry on, you know, rinse and repeat. And we actually did pretty well. I mean, it was going pretty well. We were, you know, cash flow positive and everything like that. You know, we were, you know, growing the employees, and it was pretty good. We had some really good clients, you know, and by the, you know, by the end of 2018 now, I completely forgot about the app, right? I just accepted fail, I carried on, right? And people kept coming back to me saying, where's Hoops Connect? And I was like, this is interesting. And it's 1, 2, 5, 10, 20. I was like, okay, there's a pattern here. So I looked at the market because I was sure, like, speed kills in tech, right? So I was sure there's a player now that's done it well, done it properly, and I'll just use them, right? But there was nothing. I saw new people, new companies try and do it and just fade out because, yes, it is a hard thing to do. And then we just realized that there's still a market, there's still a niche, and there's still a very big need and a problem to solve. So what happened, we just made a decision to start completely from scratch, learn from all our mistakes. We knew where we went wrong and what needed to be different. And so basically, yeah, in the beginning of 2018, we just completely started from scratch, which now is Orphi Active. And we launched in January 2020. And the product in less than a year was miles better than Hoops Connect ever was. And the only downside was that then COVID hit. But apart from that, in those few months that we were live and launched, we actually got proper traction, good feedback, and definitely on the right track. So finally, we feel like we're getting there. Even with this adversity, we're not stopping. And so hopefully it will keep going that way.
Definitely. And people ultimately want to, you know, get out and do exercise and sports, and all of that need that was there before is still going to be there now and later. So I think that's great. And I also saw on the app that there's a new feature for online stuff. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things for startups, especially that, well, we have these advantages of being quick. There's no approvals. There's no, you know, nobody's stopping you. It's just like, oh, we need to do this or we're gone, right? So we just, yeah, we wanted to stay relevant. We wanted to offer people a different way to be active and obviously, you know, adapted and overcame like we always had and we always have to, right? But if I were to give any advice to anybody starting a business, please make the app your last resort, right? Because especially from my experience with Orphi Media, and I've done like e-commerce stuff as well on the side and stuff like that. Like an app is just so much harder that it has to be your last resort. Because what I see people do now is creating apps for the sake of creating an app just because it's a popular thing. Unless there's no other alternative, I'd really avoid doing that because it takes a lot of resources, a lot of money, a lot of time, and there's just so many things you'll miss and you not think about that will take time. You know, when you read about those multi-million valuations and apps blowing up, that's such a small percentage that you know, people should be careful about that. I mean, I'm now committed, right? I'm full on in there, right? That's all I know right now. But if I had to do it again, like, I probably would have gone a different route. I probably would have gone, let's do a website first and do like something very simple and see how that goes. And then maybe we'll grow into something like an app or something like that.
So evolve it as a process rather than just diving in the deep end type thing.
Yeah.
So from now to when you first started and initially first thinking of the concept, how long is that time frame?
So yeah, I mean, from the last year, June of the idea. So yeah, that's about 7 years, I would say, something like that.
So it goes to show how long, you know, it can take to get something off the ground with multiple challenges, you know, ups and downs.
Well, obviously, it's the fact that it was my absolutely first time doing everything, right? Mm. I knew nothing about business development or apps or anything like that, right? So if I were to start again, I mean, this is a good example, right? We completely started from scratch, you know, beginning of last year. And we launched a private beta half a year, well, 6 months after, and then a public 12 months after, well, actually 10 months after, right? So in comparison to, you know, Hoops Connect being, and the first one being over 2 years and then 1.5 years. And so it does evolve. So now you know what to look out for, right?
So you can speed that process up.
Yeah, so I guess that, you know, if you are starting something like that, it's really important to surround yourself with people that have been there, done that. Even if you don't surround yourself with people as co-founders or anything like that, just try to reverse engineer other people that have been doing that. I mean, today, in today's world, you know, we've got all these podcasts and everything like that, you know, YouTube, blogs, there's a lot of information out there. You know, I made a mistake of just doing it and winging it without really educating myself. I was just like, learn as you go, as you do, which is good as well. You know, I have my own now perspective on these things rather than somebody else's. But at the same time, I probably would have saved a lot of pain and a lot of time, you know, looking at what others gone through first.
Definitely. Thinking back to the launch of this time around, were you focused on the product solely, or with something about like a pre-launch sort of marketing strategy? What was the sort of thought process? Did you want to get it out the door as a good quality product first, and then we'll worry about the marketing side, or what was the thinking before you launched?
So it was a bit unique in that situation because we had Hoops Connect before, right? So with Hoops Connect, we had a pre-launch sign up thing, and then we did this launch, and if I were to launch a completely new product, that would be the approach I would take. But with Orphi Active, because we had those users from Hoops Connect, we already had people that we knew were interested, we solely focused on product and just all of a sudden went, oh, you thought we're gone, actually here it is, right? So it was kind of like a surprise out of nowhere kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we had a mailing list. We had users that might be interested. So that's why we took that approach. So it was full on 6 months. You know, marketing was just planning, preparing, whether it's content, whether it's strategies or whatever it may be, and just full on product development. That's why we managed to get it so quickly.
Fantastic. And did you give them little snippets of something new was coming, or was it literally you didn't say anything to them until it was literally
back? Nothing. It was so out of nowhere. Literally out of nowhere. But again, one of the things that we did differently this time around than with the other two is we launched only in Manchester rather than just immediately going nationwide. Solely because then you have a controlled environment where you can really evaluate every single thing that you've done. I've met face to face close to, I guess, 200 organizers, going through everything, every single thing, getting the feedback, getting that back to developers, communicating that very well. And only now we're kind of have enough feedback and know enough to go nationwide, right? Whereas before we just went out and immediately you can't control anything, like people coming from elsewhere, everywhere, and you get feedback, like you can't really build relationships or anything like that. So we were really purposeful to have that first. So we not only generate users, we generate almost like fans that are really committed because they see that their feedback is immediately made in the app. And they're now, I made this as well, right? Yeah. I made this decision, they added to the app.
So do you think having that proximity, them to you, was one of the key sort of, I guess, factors in that initial sort of success, and you meeting them physically, did that matter, or was it 100%. Did that matter to them?
I think I'm a true believer that you have to do the unscalable to become scalable, right? The reason people were excited and were actually enjoying the app was more because they liked me as a person rather than the app being good. So they had a lot more patience and they were more committed to produce feedback just because we built that relationship. If I just had sent them an email and said, oh, try it out. You know, this it's cold, it's nothing. You know, I made it very clear that I will treat every user, every customer, as long as I can, as a genuine, you know, person, like as somebody that really just, you know, spend their time to even look at this, you know, because you're not entitled to their attention at all. Like, you have to create that value, right? And in the beginning, before they understand and know what the app is, the value is your attention and whatever you build and you know, offer on top of the app. That's why at the moment, like, we're the app is about 30, maybe 40%. The rest of it is community building and really making sure that we send the message and promote other organizers and their clubs and lesser known sports to basically the UK and the world by creating a lot of like different content and everything like that, just to give them something extra and to make people aware that these things exist, right? Because it's a lot more than just the tool, right? Mm. It's more of a mission to get more people active and healthy through a variety of different in a variety of different ways, not just, you know, football.
No, definitely. And how do you see that community and that communication with your community continuing sort of as you grow and as you expand? How are you going to sort of manage that? You're going to have like, the simplest thing I can think of is like a Facebook private group type thing.
Well, the beauty of creating really good relationships in the beginning is that then they become your ambassadors. They want to for other people to discover this app because they committed, right? They had their input in there. They can download the app and go like, you know, this thing, like I said that I this was my idea, right? Yeah. You know, it's, there's something about that autonomy, right? And you know, once you've got those people, it becomes quite easy because they want to represent your app. And so you as a founder, for example, you don't need to do that as much anymore. You just need to be basically the face of it and just make sure that in the direction that it's going, it's still listening to what the market tells you, not where essentially, I guess, where the money is immediately or anything like that. It's what is the most beneficial for the end user at this particular time.
No, fantastic. So what's the future for Offi?
Global domination. No, I think, you know, we are taking, you know, one step at a time. Yeah. We want to make sure that we launch properly nationwide. So we're available all across the UK right now. Once COVID kind of relaxes a bit more and people are more confident going outside playing team sports, we want to be there and we will be there to not only kind of offer the different ways to get active, but also for organizers to offer a way to easily manage that. A lot of people are now looking for ways to go digital. So I think, you know, we are a really good option for that. So, you know, this COVID thing might be a bit of a blessing in disguise as well. Just showcasing the importance of being healthy and active to actually withstand stuff like this. And then later on, you know, it's just expansion. You know, we're looking at Australia, we're looking at Europe. There's a lot of, you know, it's not just a need in the UK, like it's a problem that needs to be solved all over the world, right?
100%.
So just taking one step at a time, learning along the way, and yeah, making sure that we get more people more active more often.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Jonas, thanks so much for sharing your story. It's been really inspirational and phenomenal how you went from literally, you know, sleeping on a park bench to where you are now. So I really, truly wish you all the best for the future. So for everyone who's listening, make sure you check out Jonas and definitely Offi. I've subscribed. I've actually created my own little group for kids to kick around football on a Saturday afternoon. So yeah, it's a phenomenal product. Much better, I think, than the Facebook groups, which you have to keep on redoing every single week, which is a real pain. So this one, I can just
We're set. Definitely better.
Yeah, definitely. But listen, guys, thanks so much. 5-star reviews, of course, goes without saying. And yeah, don't forget to subscribe. And like I said, show your love and support to Jonas and Offi. Take care, guys.